Puridha Mahajan, Gangamai Jaman Devi, Bhakti Devi Jan, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Janami. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani. Visesa Sinyavadi Vasudhyade Satani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Pradam Sahagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitam 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 Jai Jai Shri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda
Jai
Shri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda Jai 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 Gaura Bhaktavinda It's March 31st, 2019 in New Govardhan, Australia, and we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 5, Text 62-66. 66 is on the board. There is a very, very long technical, philosophical purport to this verse. So, if you can prepare your mind, sometimes we have these very long, very technical, very philosophical purports, everyone's brain just kind of checks out. So, we can try to engage with that. So, I'm going to read 62-65, just the translation. The Maya aspect of material nature is the immediate cause of the cosmic manifestation. But it also cannot be the real cause, for the original cause is Lord Narayana. Just as the original cause of an earthen pot is the potter. Was that the potter? Noisy potter's room. Just as the original cause of an earthen pot is the potter, so the creator of the material world is the first Purusha incarnation. Karinavashai Vishnu. Lord Krishna is his creator, and Maya only helps him as an instrument, just as the potter's wheel and other instruments, which are the instrumental causes of a pot. The first Purusha casts his glance at Maya from a distance, and thus he impregnates her with the seed of life in the form of the living entities. So text 66. Eka angabasa kare maya te milana. Maya vaite janmetava brahmandera gana. Eka. One. Anga abase. Bodily reflection. Kare. Does. Mayate. In the material energy. Milana. Mixture. Maya. The material energy. Hoite. From Janme grows Tabe men Brahma Andera Gana, the groups of universes. So here we're getting the explanation of the creation of the material cosmos, not just this universe, but many, 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 many universes. So of course, every civilization has its own creation stories. And we should note that all creation stories are in the realm of the supernatural. So nowadays, the scientists have taken over as the high priests of philosophy in the Western countries. And their creation story is also supernatural. They say there was a singularity, which was infinitely small and infinitely dense beyond space and time, which inexplicably just exploded and created the universe with all the perfectly rotating planets and stars, and that somehow or other that produced one living cell that eventually turned into oak trees and pomegranate trees and koala bears and humans. So that's also a very supernatural story. So here, if we just move back a little bit to text 65, So text 65 is saying the first Purusha. First Purusha means, literally male, but here it means the first expansion of Krishna. Cast this glance at Maya. Maya is the energy of illusion from a distance, and thus he impregnates her with the seed of life in the form of the living entity. So here we're seeing the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Male, instead of impregnating the Supreme Female through sexual intercourse, is doing so through a glance. So he glances at her, and that glance gives her the seeds of the living beings, which are ourself. So then today's the next verse, 66, it's on the board, is the reflected rays of his body mix with Maya, and thus Maya gives birth to myriads of universes. So all of the, we do say that there's multi-universes. This is also a theory among the scientists, that there's more than one universe. So here we have this description, but these universes are coming from a mixture of the glance of the Lord and a reflection of the bodily rays of the Lord. And we say that the light of the sun is this reflection of the bodily effulgence of the Lord. So again, there's a very, very long, Srila Prabhupada wrote a very long commentary, very long purport. It's very technical, it's very philosophical. So if you can kind of gear your mind to focus, if everybody can do that, okay? This is... Some people are naturally philosophical and analytical, then it won't be a problem for them, but most people, these kind of things are a bit of a challenge. The speaker's not working?
Outside.
The speaker outside isn't working. So you want me to be louder? Is that the idea? You want me to be much louder, like that?
Yeah.
Would that be better?
Yeah.
All of you outside could also just come in.
Yeah.
So I don't have to shout at everybody who's here.
Sorry.
Yes. Okay, Srila Prabhupada's purport. Am I like burning the ears of the people in the room?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Look, why don't everybody who's in the room come forward 1 meter? And then all of you outsiders could become insiders. Do we need more chairs? It's not even hot in here today. It's actually kind of cool. If we need more chairs in here, if people who need to sit on chairs can come in and... Yeah, any of you who are sitting on chairs who don't need to sit on chairs, maybe you could get off of the chairs. So anyone who actually needs a chair can have one. Does everyone who's sitting in a chair actually physically need a chair? Do you actually? Okay. Sometimes. Okay. The Vedic conclusion is that the cosmic manifestation visible to the eyes of the conditioned soul is caused by the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, through the exertion of his specific energies. Although in the conclusion of atheistic deliberations, this manifested cosmic exhibition is attributed to material nature. The energy of the absolute truth. So here we have first important statement, that materialists think that material nature is the cause of itself. But the Vedic conclusion is that the Supreme causes this world through his energies. Now that's an important concept because it establishes the Supreme as a person with energies. People who have an impersonal idea of the absolute truth say that the impersonal absolute truth transformed itself into the world. Just like people are here making these giwiks. They're making the giwiks with their energies. Or you're writing notes. You're doing, I hope that's notes. You're doing that with your energies. The energy of the, you might say, well, what are these energies? So Prabhupada says, the energy of the absolute truth is exhibited in 3 ways. Spiritual, that's us. Well, no, spiritual here is the chit energy. Material and marginal. So marginal is us. We can be either in the spiritual or the material energy. The absolute truth is identical with the spiritual energy. Only when contacted by the spiritual energy can the material energy work, and the temporary material manifestations thus appear active. So we talked about this yesterday. So this is matter, and only by the touch of a living being can it work. Otherwise, it doesn't do anything by itself. In the conditioned state, the living entities of the marginal energy are a mixture of spiritual and material energies. So in our conditioned state within a body and a mind, we're acting as a mixture of both of these energies. The marginal energy is originally under the control of the spiritual energy. So this is a very important point. So there are many religious and spiritual traditions in the world today that say we began in the womb of our mother. That until we were conceived in the womb of our mother, we did not exist. That we were created in a materially conditioned or fallen state. But repeatedly, we understand that our original state is not conditioned, our original state is not fallen, our original state is completely spiritual. So the marginal energy, that's us, is originally under the control of the spiritual energy, but under the control of the material energy, the living entities have been wandering in forgetfulness within the material world since time immemorial. So time immemorial doesn't mean that it's eternal, it's simply that you can't remember it. It's been a very, very long time. That even happens in this one lifetime. We're saying, you know, I really can't remember how long I've been doing that. I just recently, in my journal, I went through and I kind of tried to figure out the dates when certain things happened. I was trying to sort out when did I first do that and when did I first do that. Even something a year ago we may not remember. So we've been going through this world in various lifetimes, incarnating in various species, past any time that we personally can remember. Going on. The conditioned state is caused by the misuse of the individual independence of the spiritual platform, for this separates the living entity from the association of the spiritual energy. So everybody always asks, why are we conditioned if we're spiritual? That is the question. And the question actually comes, I'm sorry to say, from pride. Because if I'm a spiritual being, why would I be so stupid as to be conditioned in this world? And here Prabhupada says, as he always says, it's due that we misuse our freedom. But when the living entity is enlightened by the grace of the Supreme Lord or his pure devotee and becomes inclined to revive his original state of loving service, he is on the most auspicious platform of eternal bliss and knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada makes statements like this all the time. And if we read this carefully, Srila Prabhupada says, revive his original state of loving service. So our original state is not just spiritual in a general sense. Oh, you're very spiritual. But it's a very specific state of loving service. The marginal jiva, or living entity, that's us, misuses his independence and becomes adverse to the eternal service attitude when he independently thinks he is not energy, but the energetic. This misconception of his own existence leads him to the attitude of lording it over material nature. So you see that even now in this life, most of us have an innate kind of viscerial opposition to being a servant. I haven't yet met any parent who will say to their child, when you grow up, I want you to be a servant. And even people who are themselves acting as a servant, they say, you know, I want you to be a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, isn't it? Yes. So we have and if someone says, well, you're going to be a servant, we have like a knee-jerk reaction to this. Yes, in the modern day, we have invented so many machines simply to eliminate positions of servitude. You know, Srila Prabhupada's guru made a statement that Prabhupada repeats in the recording, that Krishna is the transcendental autocrat. So for many years in the Hare Krishna movement, I just heard that kind of without thinking about it. But there was one time when I was sitting in a Govinda's restaurant with my son-in-law, and he happened to mention that. He said, yes, Krishna is the transcendental autocrat. And I felt in my heart this emotional rebellion. No! I don't like autocrats, transcendental or not. I want to be the autocrat.
Nobody can ever tell me what to do. Yes? Do you think like that? This is why all over the world we've thrown out autocracy. This is why we've thrown out the kings. This is why we have democracy, government by the people. I decide when I'm who to tell me what to do. So this mentality is the origin of our being in this conditioned state. When I want to say, I'm not the energy, I'm not a servant, I am the energetic, I am the source, I am the master. It's that mentality. And as long as we have that mentality to any degree, then we have to pretend that we're the Lord and the Master of the material energy. Now, if we use our logic and reason, we see that we're not particularly good lords and masters of the material energy, neither individually nor collectively. Collectively, when we try to be the master of the material energy, we just mess everything up, isn't it? Yes? Practically all of our problems in the modern age are trying to have dominion over the earth, and dominion over the animals, and dominion over other people, and I'm going to control my body to make it do what I want. Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? So, not only are we not terribly effective at doing this, but all we do is make a mess of things. And, you know, we're starting to learn, oh, maybe I should work in harmony with nature. Maybe I should understand how nature works and work in harmony with nature. Well, guess what that means? It means we're serving nature. Shh, don't tell anybody. You know, if we use words like we work in harmony, we work in accord, you know, we're in sync, everybody's like, oh, yes, okay. But if we actually admit the situation, nature is master. We understand the rules of nature and we agree to abide by them, which puts us in the position of being a servant. Don't tell anybody. At least wait till they've been chanting Hare Krishna for at least 10 or 15 years, and then you can kind of spring it on them. Oh, by the way. Material nature appears to be just the opposite of the spiritual energy. The fact is that the material energy can work only when in contact with the spiritual energy. Material energy can work only when in contact with the spiritual energy. Originally, the energy of Krishna is spiritual. But when it works in diverse ways, like electrical energy, which can exhibit the function of refrigerating or heating through its manifestation in different ways, the material energy is spiritual energy covered by a cloud of illusion or maya. Let's say this again. The material energy is spiritual energy covered by a cloud of illusion or maya. And we talked about this quite a bit yesterday. Everything is spiritual, which means everything is alive. And everything is eternal. Now, this table is not eternally in the form of a table, but the energy of this table is eternal. And this table is alive, not with its own life, but with the life of God. And the only reason that I see this table as dead is that I don't see that it's part of the body of God. Why don't I see it as part of the body of God? Because I don't want to. Why do I not want to? Because if I see everything as part of the body of God, I cannot be in a state of rebellion. And I gave the example yesterday that the teenager who wants to play a forbidden video game does it when the parents are out of the house, or locks the door and puts on headphones to pretend that the parents are out of the house. Because if the teenager is aware that the parents are in the house, and that it's the parents' electricity and the parents' computer and the parents' headphones and the parents' internet payments, then they cannot play a video game that's forbidden by the parents. So if we want to do things that are opposed to truth, if we want to do things in opposition to nature, if we want to do things in opposition to our body, if we want to do things in opposition to others' free will, we have to imagine that we can do whatever we want. We have to imagine that there's no cosmic law. We have to imagine that there's no cosmic order. We have to imagine that everything is not ultimately alive. Just like with the other living entities, the only way that that people can exploit other people sexually, or can exploit other people for slave labor, or can exploit other people by making them work in unsafe and unsanitary conditions for the sake of a little extra money in their pocket, is by forgetting that those other people are living beings like themselves. They have to see those other living beings as objects. The only way that people can eat animals is by forgetting that they're other living beings like themselves and have their own feelings and desire. And the only way that we can exploit the material energy is by forgetting that it's part of the body of God, that actually it's filled with the awareness and the consciousness of Krishna. It's not a living being in and of itself. The table has no consciousness of its own existence. But Krishna is conscious of its existence from within, not just by looking at the table. So this covering of illusion or maya is this idea that something is different from what it is. We see things as dead. We think that we are the only living being. Or sometimes we see ourselves as a machine also. We see everything devoid of life. So this maya exists, as it's said in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, only within our own mind, only within our own consciousness. Now what's really even more interesting is this energy by which we don't see the divine is also an energy of the divine. So our ability to not see the divine is divine. He says, this is my divine energy that allows you to not see the divine. I give you not only knowledge and remembrance, but also forgetfulness. So even when we forget, when we think, oh, it's just a table, it's just a tree, it's just a cow, even when we forget, that's under the influence of the divine. Again, the material energy is spiritual energy covered by a cloud of illusion or maya. Therefore, the material energy is not self-sufficient in working. Krishna invests his spiritual energy into material energy and then can act, just as iron can act like fire after being heated by fire. The material energy can act only when empowered by the spiritual energy. When covered by the cloud of material energy, again, is the energy by which we do not perceive the divine. We do not perceive the divine in ourselves. We do not perceive God in our heart. We do not perceive that we are divine. We do not perceive that others are divine. We do not perceive that matter is infused with divine potency. The living entity, who is also a spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forgets about the activities of the spiritual energy and considers all that happens in the material manifestation to be wonderful. But a person who is engaged in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness and who is therefore already situated in the spiritual energy, can understand that the material energy has no independent powers. Whatever action are going on are due to the help of the spiritual energy. The material energy, which is a perverted form of the spiritual energy, presents everything pervertedly, thus causing misconceptions and duality. Material scientists and philosophers, well, each of these sentences we could talk about for a week or two or a month or something. I'm so tempted, and I'm thinking, well, it says 8:15 and it's already 8:07 and I'm hardly even halfway through this purport. Material scientists and philosophers, conditioned by the spell of material nature, suppose that material energy acts automatically, and therefore they are frustrated, like an illusion person who tries to get milk from the nipple-like bunches of skin on the neck of a goat. As there is no possibility of getting milk from these bunches of skin, there is simply no possibility that anyone will be successful in understanding the original cause of creation by forwarding theories produced by the material energy. Such an attempt is a manifestation of ignorance. So this statements can be understood in two different complementary ways. One is that material nature can only move and only act when touched by spirit. So this is matter. It's not going to jump up by itself, but I can have it jump up, right? I, as a spiritual being. Another way one can understand this is that the material conception that everything is separate from the divine cannot produce anything. It cannot produce any knowledge, any understanding, any connection, any relationship, any happiness, anything. It may look like it can. If we have some conception that everything is just mechanical, if that's our idea, it may look that like with that conception, we can produce a microphone, we can produce a smartphone, we can build a building, we can do all these things. But actually, that conception, all it does is cause us trouble. Yes? It doesn't do anything positive for us. It may appear to, but it doesn't. So only when we have a consciousness of reality can we produce anything that actually causes peace or happiness in the world. So you can look at it either way. Going on, the material energy of the Supreme Personality of God is called Maya or illusion, because in two capacities, by supplying the material elements and by causing the material manifestation, it makes the conditioned soul unable to understand the real truth of creation. When a living entity is liberated, however, from the conditioned life of matter, he can understand the two different activities of material nature, namely covering and bewildering. So once one is liberated, then one can actually understand the nature of illusion. Just like when you're sleeping, generally, you can't understand that you're sleeping. Sometimes we have a lucid dream, and when we're sleeping, we understand that we're sleeping. But generally, when we're sleeping, especially in deep sleep, we don't really understand that we're sleeping at all. Now, I can understand I was sleeping when I am awake. And I can understand someone else who's sleeping when I'm awake. So once I'm enlightened, once I'm liberated, then and only then can I understand the nature of illusion. I can't understand illusion from being in illusion. Going on, the origin of creation is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10, the cosmic manifestation is working under the direction of the Supreme Lord, who invests the material energy with three material qualities. Agitated by these qualities, the elements supplied by the material energy produce varieties of things, just as an artist produces varieties of pictures by mixing the three colors red, yellow, and blue. Yellow represents the quality of goodness, red represents passion, and blue represents ignorance. Therefore, the colorful material creation is but an interaction of these three qualities, represented in 81 varieties of mixtures. 3 times 3 is 9, 9 times 9 is 81. And then the three themselves make 84. So that gives us 8,400,000 species. Deluded by material energy, the conditioned soul, enamored by these 81 varieties of manifestations, wants to lord it over material energy, just as a fly wants to enjoy a fire. This illusion is the net result of the conditioned soul's forgetfulness of his eternal relationship with his Supreme Personality of Godhead. Again, that Prabhupada is talking about an eternal what? Relationship. When conditioned, the soul is impelled by the material energy to engage in sense gratification, whereas one enlightened by the spiritual energy engages in the service of the Supreme Lord in his eternal relationship. So what do we mean by sense gratification? What we mean by sense gratification is when I think I am separate from the Lord, and I try and I think I have this body and this mind, and I think that happiness means to satisfy this body and this mind separate from my connection to the whole. If we think about this in terms of our body, so I am the big soul in this body, right? But my body has lots and lots and lots of souls, right? Every cell in my body is alive and has its own little life, right? We have so many cells in the body. There's cells making up my eyes and my skin and my tongue and my stomach. I have stomach cells and I have heart muscle cells and I have neuron cells, right? Correct? Now, I would assume that none of those cells are aware that I exist. They all have their own little life and they're, you know, breathing and they're eating and they're talking to other cells, right? And they're reproducing and they're having their little life. And they're not, they don't have an awareness, I would assume, that they're serving me. Huh? Right? But if they're serving me, they become happy. So if every little muscle cell in my body is working for the good of the whole body, whether it realizes it or not, then that cell also becomes happy. Now, as soon as that cell tries to work for its own happiness separate from the body, what do we call that kind of cell?
Disease.
Cancer. Cancer. That is cancer. Cancer is when a cell separates its interest from the interest of the whole body. Now, me, as the overriding soul in this body, do I desire the happiness of all of my cells? Do all of you desire that all your bodily cells are happy? Do you just want them to work for you in unhappy slavery?
No.
It's like,
Digest, you miserable stomach cells. Don't enjoy anything. Just have me enjoy my food. Is that how you think? Would you like your stomach to be happy? Would everybody like their stomach cells to be happy? Huh? Happy, happy stomach. Do you want your heart cells to be happy? Yeah? In their own right, would you, do you desire their happiness? Maybe don't think about it anymore. So Krishna is the ultimate soul. He's the soul of the soul. And he wants all of us to be happy. But the way that we can be happy is in a cooperative, harmonious mood. As soon as we look for our own happiness separate from the whole, we become a cancer in the universal body. And it's that mentality and action that Srila Prabhupada calls sense gratification. That's the term that he uses. So Srila Prabhupada's not implying that our senses shouldn't be gratified. Just like we're not implying that if my digestion works very well, that all the little cells in my digestive system shouldn't also be gratified. In fact, my digestion can't work well unless all the little cells in my digestive system are also gratified. Isn't that a fact? So Krishna wants us to be happy. In fact, he has unlimited desire for each of us to be unlimitedly happy. But he knows that we cannot be happy at all if we try to be happy separately. So we shouldn't misunderstand Prabhupada's use of this word sense gratification to mean that God wants all of us to be like, I am really miserable. I'm just a miserable slave. Krishna's happy. No. Krishna is the original going on. Krishna is the original cause of the spiritual world, and he is the covered cause of the material manifestation. Covered because we don't see how he's the cause. He is also the original cause of the marginal potency, the living entities. Now this is an interesting thing, because although he's the cause, it's not that at one time we didn't exist and then we existed. He's eternally the cause. Like the sun creates the sunshine, but they both exist simultaneously. Going on, he is both the leader and maintainer of the living entities who are called marginal potency because they can act under the protection of the spiritual energy or under the cover of the material energy. With the help of the spiritual energy, we can understand that independence is visible only in Krishna, who by his inconceivable energy is able to act in any way he likes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the absolute whole. See, when I read that, I feel rebellious. Did you feel rebellious when I read that? Anybody feel rebellious? When I read that, you want to just kind of check it out? With the help of the spiritual energy, we can understand that independence is visible only in Krishna, who by his inconceivable energy is able to act in any way he likes. Did any of you feel a little like tinge of, what? Independence is visible only in Krishna? What about me? Can I be independent? Did you feel that way? You don't have to admit it. Sorry. Actually, Prabhupada said earlier that we're here because of a misuse of our minute independence. So we do have independence. We just don't have independence to act however we like and have it be okay. So Krishna can act in any way he likes and it's okay. But for me, I have some ways I can act and it's okay, and other ways I can act and it's not okay. So I don't have this kind of supreme independence. But yes, if we have some like, I don't like that, then we become a cancer. I don't like that. I don't want to digest food for the whole body. I want to just digest food for myself. I quit from being a harmonious stomach cell. And, going on, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the absolute whole. The living entities are parts of the absolute whole. This relationship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities is eternal. One should never mistakenly think that the spiritual whole can be divided into small parts by the small material energy. Bhagavad Gita does not support this. Mayavada philosophy. So Mayavada philosophy is that God can be in broken parts.
Rather, it clearly states, it being Bhagavad Gita, that the living entities are eternally small fragments of the supreme spiritual whole. That's the verse, Mamai Vamsa Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana. As a part can never be equal with the whole, so a living entity, as a minute fragment of the spiritual whole, cannot be equal at any time to the supreme whole, the absolute personality of Godhead. Although the supreme Lord and the living entities are quantitatively related as the whole and the parts, the parts are nevertheless qualitatively one with the whole. Thus the living entities, although always qualitatively one with the whole, are in a relative position. The supreme personality of Godhead is the controller of everything, and the living entities are always controlled either by the spiritual energy or by the material energy. So some of us might have felt rebellious about that one. I'm always controlled by something. Oh my goodness. Therefore, a living entity can never become the controller of material or spiritual energies. The natural position of the living being is always as a subordinate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one agrees to act in such a position, he attains perfection in life, but if one rebels against this principle, he's in the conditions. So it's already 8:19, so I'll just talk for like for 2 or 3 minutes and then we can have questions. So we should understand, although we're always controlled by the Lord, in our liberated state, actually we can have whatever we want other than to be a Cancer. So it's explained that in the spiritual world there are called Kalpavriksha trees, there are desire trees. And the desires of the liberated soul are all instantly, automatically, and fully fulfilled. Now there's some spiritual groups today on the planet that understanding this principle thinks that can work when we're in a conditioned state. That in a conditioned state I can just kind of meditate on anything and it will just manifest. You know, I'll just sit in my room and go, red jaguar, red jaguar, red jaguar, red jaguar. And I'll kind of look in my driveway and there will be. And that doesn't work when we're disconnected from the whole. I mean, it works in an ultimate sense that if I want that, Krishna will give me the intelligence to have the good karma to eventually get my room travel and pay for it karmically. But when we're in a liberated state, actually anything we want is immediately there. So again, it's not that Krishna, and in fact, one aspect of the liberated state is that God fully shares his opulences with the liberated jiva. It's one of the 5 kinds of liberation that one shares in all the opulences of the Lord. Just like I share everything with all the cells of my body, don't I? Yeah? I'm not stingy about it. I don't say, up you, out, not this finger, no, no, no. And not like that. Whatever I have, I fully share with my body. In a functional family, I don't know if there are many of those around in 2019, but in a functional family, that also is what happens. Every member of the family fully shares all their opulences with every other member of the family. Yes? That's the idea of family. That's why, you know, you'll invite your family member over for Christmas dinner or something, and, you know, the grandparents may be spending $500 or $600 on this huge meal that they're feeding their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, right? Plus they spent so many hours, maybe they normally got paid $40, $50 an hour for their work, but they may be spending 10 or 12 hours or 15 or 20 hours shopping and cleaning the house and cooking for the family. And then after you finish your Christmas meal at your grandparents' house, you don't say, well, how much do I owe you for the meal? In fact, if you did that, your grandparents would be very offended, and you'd probably damage your family relationships for the rest of your life. And if you said, how much do I owe you? Was that 300, maybe 400? Isn't it? Right? Because what's the understanding? That when we're in a family, everybody shares with everybody. So Krishna shares his opulence and his power and everything with the living entities fully. We don't become the loser by surrendering to Krishna. We become the gainer by millions and millions of times. And only when we're in a state of rebellion do we lose access to that. Like I have some friends whose son became a heroin addict, so they wouldn't let him in the house because he would steal. And the point I also would like to make from this commentary of Srila Prabhupada is that Prabhupada repeats many times in this purport that we have an eternal relationship of loving service with the Lord. Eternal means no beginning and no end, and our original state is of a loving relationship. Each of us has a particular relationship of individual love with the Lord. That relationship is our choice. Exactly what kind of loving relationship. There's as many different kinds of loving relationships as there are living beings. We can put them into 5 general categories. We can have a relationship of just awe, a relationship of being a servant, a relationship of being a friend, a parent, or a romantic partner. But even within those 5 categories, they're unlimited, as many as there are living beings. We have a personal, individual, loving relationship with the Lord. And that relationship has no beginning and no end. Right now we're in forgetfulness of that relationship because we want to be in forgetfulness of that relationship. But as soon as we want to revive that relationship, Krishna wants to revive it more than we do. And our process of Krishna consciousness is reviving that individual, personal, loving relationship. And as we start to revive that relationship, we see that it's so sweet and that it's so wonderful that whatever we imagine that we're getting in rebellion has no value. And therefore, we gradually get the courage and we gradually get the conviction that we no longer want to be in rebellion, that we actually want to be in love and we want to be in harmony. So, thank you very much. We have 5 minutes till the end of the question period. Sorry about that. It was a very long and complicated commentary, and I felt if I just read through it that nobody would remember anything. Maybe 2 or 3 of you intellectuals would have. So, yes, questions, comments? I hope all of you who remained outside could still hear me.
Thank you very much for your class. So we're hearing that where our eternal home is a spiritual realm and Krishna is a eternal loving relationship based on service. So why is it that as soon as we hear that in our conditioned state, we do rebel? Where is that rebellion, rebellious spirit coming?
Why do we still have a rebellious spirit? Do you really want to know? I'm just talking about myself. Because I'm a total flaming, arrogant idiot. There's really no reason. It's not a logical reason. Like if you say, why does anyone smoke tobacco? And my apologies to any of you who have smoked, or maybe some of you who are still smoking. It's just stupidity. Nobody looks at the logical reasons. Well, let's see, if I smoke tobacco, then I'll get this. What benefit do you get out of it? Is there any benefit? I guess if your friends are smoking, you hang out with them and you're cool, or, you know, the tobacco companies advertise, smoking is for adults. See, we're not trying to get teenagers to smoke. Now, maybe someone starts to smoke because they think, well, that way I'll be an adult. Is there a logical reason for it? No, it's not logical. It's just pure, absolute foolishness. There's no other explanation. You know, last night at the Bhakti Center, the problem with going to the Bhakti Center is you leave there at 9 and you get here at 11. So we were having a program in remembrance of this one woman who was murdered by her husband because he had a new girlfriend. So is that a logical thing to do? To murder your wife because you have a girlfriend? Why don't you just divorce her? You know, why do you have to kill her? It didn't work out very well for him, did it? You know, so that, why do people do things like that? It isn't logical. And frankly, at least I'll just talk about myself, okay? There's a lot of things that I do on a regular basis that if I really thought about them, I would say, why am I doing this? Can anyone here say that you only and always do things that you know are in your best interest? Who can say here that always, all day, every day, for the last month, you only did things that you knew were in your best interest? Anybody? Why? It's a ridiculous question. There's not an answer to it. More and more, whenever people say, "Why did she do that? Why did he do that?" I'd say that there's an answer to this question. It's just foolishness. Sorry. But once we see that, it's actually kind of relief. You can really just get, oh, it's just foolishness. I don't need to be a fool. I don't have to. I'm a soul. I have all knowledge, actually. You know, really, even the most horrible evil is really just foolishness. It's really just silly. And we can let go of anything that's binding us to this world when we just see it like that. And then we, because that allows us to be a little humble, you know, and just go, oh, yeah, I'm kind of dumb. We all know we're kind of dumb. Yes? We all know all those silly and foolish things that we do. Yes? That we don't want to admit to anybody else. Oh, yeah, I think I can eat that cheesecake. Even though I'm already totally full. And I've eaten cheesecake in the past. And I know how it makes me feel. But here I am at the cardamom pod. And look at that cheesecake. Now I must say, I did not eat the cheesecake yesterday. But the only reason I didn't eat the cheesecake yesterday is I know I had to give a class in the evening. If I didn't have to give a class in the evening, I probably would have eaten the cheesecake. But I didn't want to give a class like this. And then... So why do we do that? Now, if we can just admit, the person we have to admit to is ourselves. And to God, who already knows. Krishna already knows that we're foolish, but he still loves us. Just like parents love their children, even when their children are having a temper tantrum. I said I'd give you the toy already. I'll give it to you. It's right here. I'm going to give it. No! You still love them, you know. You don't stop loving them. Or I've given the example before. When I was visiting my kids, so there's one of their sons who's now he's 12. I mean, he was 2 or something. So 2-year-olds, when their nose is running, they go like this. You know, and he had bare arms. He had like short sleeves. And his nose had just been running. And he'd just been going like this. You know, so he goes up to his father covered in mucus. But his father still loved him. It's not that his father went, "Ew, you're not my son." So Krishna still loves us. And he's just like, "Come on. Really? Like, really? Come on. Come on. Just admit that you're a fool. That's all. That's all you have to do." "No, I'm not. I'm very intelligent." "Okay. Fine. I'm waiting here, you know, when you're ready." And all we have to do is look inside and go, "Man, am I stupid. Whoa! I'm an eternal soul. I belong in the kingdom of God with desire trees, where I have unlimited happiness, unlimited power, unlimited knowledge by connection with the Supreme. And what am I doing? For what? For a pizza? For sex? For fracking? What am I doing here?" Okay, fine. That's all he wants from us. It's actually pretty simple. And to say that we're sorry. To have some regret. To go, "I'm really sorry I've been having a temper tantrum for the last 5,000,000,000,000,000 bursts when you were already willing to give me everything I wanted. I'm really sorry. That was really dumb. You've been kind of sad about it, haven't you?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he says, "Actually, I'm unlimitedly happy. The only person you've been messing up is yourself. And I was kind of sad about that." And then we go, "Gosh, I'm sorry. You still love me? I always loved you. Okay, well, I love you too. Can I have my relationship back?" "Sure, it was always there." That's it. That's all it is. But for most of us, that takes... For most of us, it takes a few lifetimes of practicing bhakti before we finally go, okay. Is that all right? Okay. So it's now after 8:30, and we have to have breakfast. Thank you very much. I'm allowed? I don't know. Is Ajita here? Is he going to allow me to answer one more question? Did he say yes?
Yeah.
Did he say yes? He didn't say anything. Ajita, am I allowed or not?
All right. Okay. Microphone is trying to fit. In Prabhupada's purport, he said that although we are the energy, we think we are the energetic.
Yes.
It's really
very profound, isn't it? So many of the statements here are so profound. Just take any one of these sentences.